We now have the participation of Dr. Melina Gomez. She is doctor in science and a specialty in physics. She is a teacher of the Department of Physics and Mathematics in the University of the Americas in Puebla. Her area of research is subatomic particles, specifically. I'm sorry, I didn't understand that. And its behavior in different atomic models. The title is On Basic Science and Freedom, Newton, the Mood, the Moon, and the Internet. Let us hear Dr. Melina. Thank you. Good afternoon. I am a physicist, as you heard, and for us as physicists, as you must have noticed, this reflection on science before the wall has been like hitting ourselves on the wall. It has cost, as has been a great deal of effort. I hope that in the reflections I was able to develop with my other colleagues and try to establish with greater clarity, and I hope that I can do it. I will use Newton, the moon, and the internet to connect something. I hope you will understand me. I want to begin with a phrase by Eric Fromm. He says, the human beings not only have to protect themselves from the danger of losing life, but also from the danger of losing reason. This phrase says a lot about the wall, because if you only see the first part, and to generate better food, or internal in neoliberal capitalist terms, that's precisely its reason of being, but they forget the second part. And for Fromm, says Enrique Lubilla, he says, man is obligated to create a new harmony with nature, since it would be unbearable its separation, man could go crazy because of how unbearable the state is. And this part is one we have forgotten, or that the system has forgotten, that our reasoning can also go to the other extreme of fanaticism and alienation. And that's where I believe that basic science should be a strong struggle. So talking about the wall and alienation, the wall, as we have said, I want to talk about alienation. And we can give a few examples of the phrases that the political class and around the world, some of them say it openly, and in other cases, public policies demonstrate it, that there is no global warming, that doesn't exist. We've talked about that here. That's part of the alienation, that research that doesn't produce money or that doesn't produce patents is worthless and it's not worth investing in it. Recently, the President of the United States forbid using phrases like, based on scientific researches, recommendations based on sciences and the desires of community desires. So what does that mean? It's so ambiguous that we don't know what it means, and he has forbidden to use words for the EPA. It's transgendered, vulnerable, fetus, diversity. These words are forbidden. And this is alienation, and if this is a political leader, just imagine how our societies led by this leader and the countries that follow policies emerging from that country. Another part of the wall is when talking about these public policies, that in real terms, since 2016, there was a budget cut in science and technology in real time, in terms of 25%. And here we're talking about, well, look for jobs in companies. Well, sure. If you're in an island, you can say, well, just continue swimming until you find a stick where you might rest. It is at least insensitive to say that, but the real facts are that since 16 years ago, there has been no new research center created in Mexico. And this is what's generating the fact that we have no place to work. Another of the talks that we heard here was said that we as scientists who survive with a fellowship from CONACYT, we're part of the wall, and this can eliminate our moral legitimacy to be here in front of you to say something. But I think that we can try to analyze, and from the point of view of where we are standing, I come from a private university, so that you can even throw more tomatoes at me if you want. But from the perspective of where we're standing or where we could locate ourselves, we can still combat the wall. And so I say, it depends. For example, if we manage to keep from being stepped on, emotionally stepped on by the permanent evaluations that are applied to us on our various capacities through the national system of research systems or project or research projects, or if in some way, in addition to all of our many, many activities, we manage to come to a science encounter here and try to do a reflection on what we're doing, or to affect with some activity within our communities that is worth not a single point. It doesn't matter. The point is, I want to do something, we want to do something, and of course, to try to do it collectively. And one of the most direct ways of doing this is, and of course, we teach, and we have to teach many classes, and we have to do it well, because we want our students to love sciences and not to hate them. And so it's a lot of time that we have to spend in order to give a good class. But we can't lose sight of the dialectical forms. We can't just stand in front of a classroom and vomit knowledge and wisdom, but to help to build knowledge in students at the rhythms, at their rhythms, that are not homogeneous. They're doing it heterogeneously. As Paulo Freire would say, I imagine all of you here know the pedagogy of Freire, so I won't delve in it, but that's the idea. So we're not doing something that breaks that wall. Because remember, alienation, going back to the point of alienation, it comes from not being able to understand or use the scientific method to understand our environment and thus make decisions. And so one way of avoiding that alienation is to try to understand the reality that surrounds us. Because alienation is exiting that reality and believing no matter what. I want to mention here an event that I think no one mentioned, which happened this year, which is a struggle against the wall of alienation, which was a march for science, and it was a worldwide march. Thanks to some friends in the National Assembly of Graduate Studies, and we talked some with them, and this talk was very helpful to me because I needed to reflect collectively. And so we talked about this part, and I was going to talk about science and technology and how the budget has been cut, and they enriched the information very greatly, and so the struggle that happened as a march. These are images in the United States, but it took place in many places, in Mexico City as well. And these are some of the slogans, the new slogans that scientists elaborated, who went out to scream on the street. One of the data that gave me is that in 2000, it was established that 1% of the internal product was would be given to science, and of course that was never that was never done. So going back, retaking, going back to Newton, the moon, and the internet, and alienation. The point is to try to do something for scientific literacy. And maybe we don't want everyone to be a scientist, but what we do want is to have a level of decision making, of knowing how things work, of knowing how our universe works, because we don't want we want fewer of our students go into alienation and fanaticism of things like the Earth is flat. And I say this because this guy, Max Argent, he has 40,000 subscribers in his YouTube channel. They organized a conference. I don't know how big it was. It terrifies me. It really does terrify me. In which they charged $150 to each participant, and all entrances were sold. So this is the hole that Subgaleano was saying under the floating line, which we are not seeing. I think that I'm a physicist, and I've seen it from the side of physics, though I heard many things but very interesting from other areas, but this really makes me shudder. And so you say, well, if the Earth is flat, then how did Christopher Columbus reach America? Well, their flat Earth is this. What you see here, it's a projection of a sphere on a plane, and there is a barrier that would be Antarctica around it, surrounding the Earth. If I say to you the Earth is flat, then what would you say? Everybody would say as a dogma, well, what do you mean? But prove it to me. How could we prove it? Because that's what science is about. So if someone is good at speaking and we don't know how to demonstrate it, and that's what we're talking about when we talk about scientific literacy. I have the arguments to refute what you are saying, or all I know is that in elementary school I was told that it was round, and I actually had a childhood friend that is actually a very dear friend, and I don't know, I think, I suppose he came to this Congress, and I tried to give him the simplest arguments. It says, well, Christopher Columbus wouldn't arrive, and he would say, no, well, this is so. And the images of the Earth, well, they're animations. And satellites, how does your phone work? And he would come up with answers to all of this, and crazy answers. In the ocean, but here we're not as close as the ocean, but we see the ship, and then we would see the whole ship complete, and we would just see it smaller. But what we see is that suddenly you don't see the whole ship, you only see the top part of the ship, because this is curved. Of course, this has to be a long distance, but there is something simpler. In some talk, they spoke about this, and I think it's important in this regard, that if you're in a different parallels of the Earth, you can measure the shadow, and you see that in the summer solstice, which would be 21 June. And there you could compare what is the shadow in two different cities. Of course, we're not going to Alexandria to see that, but in Mexico there is a Tropic of Cancer, and also in Ciudad Victoria. And so I ask someone from La Sexta, and take an image of a light post in your city, and I will take a picture of the light post in Mexico City or in Chiapas, doesn't matter. And with that, I can demonstrate that there is a curve on the Earth. I could even, just with that data, calculate the angle and measure just with trigonometry. You measure x, y, you calculate the angle, and with that you calculate the radius of the Earth, and I can tell you what the radius of the Earth is. So it seems like I'm just giving a course that would have been done 2,000 years ago, but it's terrible what alienation causes. And why do they do that? Why do they tell us that the Earth is round? Oh, because they want to get money from us. They want to earn money. NASA wants to get money from us. NASA, obviously, because this also happens in Mexico. There are followers here and everywhere, but NASA receives billions of dollars, and the army receives $24 billion, $19 billion for the NASA, and $24 billion for the military. And it turns out we're not talking only about just common people who are not scientists. In Arabia, in the Arab Emirates, a student, a science student, her thesis is the Earth is flat. This is a PhD dissertation. And her arguments were that the Quran said such and such, and the Prophet said such and such, and this was a PhD dissertation. And so this guy, Nidal Guesson, is a physics professor, and he is a president of the Astronomical Society in the Arab Emirates, and he works at the university. He placed an alert on this, but this girl had already finished her dissertation. It was being revised, and she was going to present it. And so this is not something that happens only in the madness of our neighboring country, but it happens everywhere. And it has to do with this alienation. In the Arab Emirates, the professor said the problem was that you can't separate science. If you don't separate science from religion, then you get all messed up. And so here Newton comes in, because since the times of Newton in England, even though Newton was a man of great faith and a great believer, at that time they make the division between the state, the church, and science. And we are in, and we did it as well, one way or another, but in countries like the Arab Emirates, this is still very mixed. And that's why it's so important not to say that the scientific method is arbitrary. No. Those of us who understand the scientific method and have applied it can know that it is flexible. But we can't say that it is arbitrary, because then we will get things from the Quran and the Bible, and who knows what will come out. Last time, last year, we spoke a bit about the numbers and cosmological numbers, which are huge. We're talking about billions of kilometers. And talking about these numbers that are so big, and going back to the point of policies on science, we find also very large numbers. $2 billion spent in propaganda and publicity for Mexican presidents. That's so far in his administration. Let's see other large numbers. Talking about public policies, we see that the budget for 2018 by the National Electoral Institute are 25 billion pesos. And for CONACYT, a little bit more. Of course, let's say that CONACYT has 58,000 Sorry, I got disconnected here. We're back. Thank you. Going back to the issue to trying to understand Newton, or not Newton, but basic science, and how Newton generated all this knowledge of gravity, which implies a lot. The fact of the Earth is flat, we can argue against that with a theory of gravity or the magnetic field of the Earth, because these type of knowledges are not related. One thing explains one thing, the other one is explained in a different way. But the idea of science is that if you explain something, then everything else must also enter the same model, so that you can actually reproduce nature's model, because nature is complete. Nature is not divided into parts. So Newton develops the universal law of gravity, and I want to go deeper in this part so we don't stay in it just as dogmas. And I also wanted to talk about what happens in Mexico, or what happened in Mexico in Newton's time, to contextualize it. Well, there was Sor Juana Inés de la Cruz. Sor Juana Inés de la Cruz was reading the forbidden books by Copernicus, who, and of course, she wasn't reading Newton's because they didn't exist yet. It was hard even for her to speak, to acquire Copernicus, where they spoke about heliocentrism, and it was the only way for a woman to have access to books. And then, well, you all know the story. Part of her punishment was to give away and throw away all the books that she had. A very interesting story. I admire this woman very greatly. I much recommend it to you. But let's go back to gravity. This would be the example of geocentrism and heliocentrism. So if you observe, based on the observation of things, that every observation has to coincide with a model. We see that if we see the trajectory of Mars, if you see the trajectory of Mars from Earth, and we are the center, then we see Mars going forth, back and forth, because when the Earth, if the Earth is moving, which is how we know it's moving, then there is a moment when the Earth overcomes, and then it's like. So these observations could not be made compatible with the idea that the Earth was the center of the Earth, and so that's where the idea of the heliocentrism comes. So it's observations, but it's not unique observations, but they're integrated. That's why it is fundamental, and many people have said it here, that science is a collective thing, because all observations have to coincide. And we can't all make all observations, so it is a collective effort that we can construct collectively with observations. And what we need is to be able to communicate with each other, and to do so, we need a common language and a common method. And so that's why we speak of the scientific method. It's not just you make things up, you have to prove it, it has to be reproducible. So how does this idea of gravity come from? And how long did Newton spend to study gravity? And what patent was the result of that? Or what was that used for at that time? So Newton was supported to study and do research. He, of course, thought as well on something that didn't have a direct application. And I'm telling you a bit of how the abstraction works. He was studying the parabolic shooting, like Defensa Zapatista, when she kicks a ball. And there are ways of analyzing this. And there's two extreme cases. One, when the ball falls directly from down to up, or the from up to down, the image of the apple falling on Newton's head, or imagine extremely powerful defensa zapatista who kicks the ball so hard that it leaves the earth and it never falls. And what does it do? Well, it remains going around the earth forever. And so these three elements, the fall of all objects in a straight line, the parabolic shots, and the moon going around the earth, they're all parts of the same thing. They're phenomena or consequences of the same thing. Now, what incredible capacity of abstraction in Newton. Newton said all of it is the product of the same thing. It is a force of gravity of attraction. Newton published three very large books, but it took him years, and he didn't have to do institutional reports and look for projects and so on. And this is what rules over us up to now, not only the law of gravity, but all of laws of Newton. And this is to understand basic science and to understand why the flower is the way it is. I'm going to speed up because I think I said the most relevant parts of my talk. And of course, with this type of knowledge, we reach the moon. Almost no one knows Margaret Hamilton. Does anybody know Margaret Hamilton? Everybody knows the astronaut Neil Armstrong, the one who put his foot on the moon. But she was the one who wrote all the code of the ship that reached the moon. And the books that we see here, as the books, they're all the lines of codes, imprinted code that was used. A team led by her that reached the moon. And so here we say once again, who had more merit? I'm not saying that Neil Armstrong wasn't a great guy to walk on the earth, walk on the moon, but what a great deal of work, and nobody knows it. Why does a woman who worked so hard is not recognized? That's the wall. So now everyone, and we know that because we realize that there is a cell phone ringing here. Everybody has a cell phone because there are satellites that can send signals. Everybody has a TV signal. All telecommunications take place thanks to the satellites who are in orbit because Newton made these studies on gravity about 300 years ago, and nobody demanded of him to have a patent or to develop science where you could earn money from. To conclude, I have a minute left. Basic science today is made in a particle accelerator, and among many developments that have been attained from knowing the structure of matter, the touch screen, for example, and one of the ones that's been mostly used, which is free, because in its origins, everything that was generated in this research center was free to be used. And the www that everybody uses for web pages, the World Wide Web, is a product of a research, a basic science research center. I leave you with this, and I can't talk about this part, but I will leave you with this phrase. Thank you. We thank the words of Dr. Gomez. We now will have the word, an audio sent by the Mapuche compañeros denouncing the repression of the Chilean state against the indigenous woman Machi Linconao. We want to express our condemnation of what happened today in the tribunal, which is the annulment of the case of Machi. We think that this annulment, this judicial decision is irregular. is racist, the racism that is in tribunals in Temuco. I think you can't annul a trial that took such a long time and for which our Mapuche brothers and sisters had to suffer preventive prison for a long time and a hunger strike and a violation of human rights. We think that once again it's being established that there is no justice for Mapuches in this country, and that it's a way of operation of the justice courts that right now, I think, they're looking, rather than justice, they're looking for revenge. They want to show their power. And that grave damage has done to the family hasn't been measured. And in this second trial, they have been waiting for a different political scenario. We think that they're looking for a strategy to be able to have judges that can favor them. And having already a verdict that absolved them, that was unanimous, we think that it is a gigantic way of trampling what is established as justice for these 11 people, and that it violates all the states of rights. And once again, we regret that in Temuco there is still this judicial persecution, and we want to ask for your support and your help and solidarity that we already have and that will be very necessary in the next and the following times, where once again this trial will take place, probably from March on. And this national and international support is very important, and a constant mobilization. Our Machi Francisca Lincoln now needs especially a great deal of strength, because she is still not recovered from the judicial process she had to suffer, and now she has to enter another one. So this is therefore goes beyond all limits that one person can withstand, and she's had it very difficult this time because she is a Machi, because she is a traditional authority, and because she is a defender of the territory. So we call for mobilizations and to raise awareness and to transmit this information and to be able to activate everything that might be necessary to pressure this government and to establish justice. The fact that justice is not being coherent with its principles, and we have to struggle once again to attain justice from mobilizations.